2024 is the year of podcasts, and we want to let you know about a brand new show that is live right now. Join with me to share the good news about the Worthy of Everything podcast. It's just one of the two hosts, Jedra Lasso. Jedra, you've been working on this podcast in the background. Our team has been very excited as we've been preparing for its launch. How does it feel to know that the episodes finally are out there and we're moving forward every single week?
It is so exciting, and I am just excited to see where God takes it. And I have so much hope that it is going to be an incredible blessing to the listeners.
Amen, amen. But as I understand it, this is a show tackling the issues of mental health through the lens of the gospel. Can you share just a little bit more about the heart and the intent and who you're really trying to serve through the Worthy of Everything podcast?
So I personally was freed from depression, and as I've come to understand my freedom from sin and identity in Christ, I start to recognize all these amazing gifts that God has given us. So yeah, just exploring and hearing awesome testimonies about how to walk out true intimacy with a loving father who pursues his kids.
Oh man, sounds like a good time. If you want to check out the show, lovereality.org/podcasts and look for the Worthy of Everything show.
A lot of people don't believe the gospel can change your life. We have evidence it can. Debt to Life shares testimonies of radical transformation, stories of people getting freed from and healed from sin, so you can hear, believe, and be transformed by Jesus. This is Death to Life. I know you hold me down.
After that, like, I remember thinking, like, this is it. Like, this right here is where God has completely stopped loving you. And I truly believe that. I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't even have to like think like, oh, I need to forgive them now. It just, I saw them and I love them. Truly. Like, it was a miracle.
Yo, welcome to the Death to Life podcast. My name is Richard Young, and today's episode is with Esme, and it is crazy powerful. But before we get into that, I want to ask you to rate the Death to Life podcast on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Rate it. Leave a review. And in your review, say awesome things about the Death to Life podcast. Because we want people to see and hear and know about these stories that have changed people's lives. And so please do that. That's what I'm asking you. Do it, please. Okay. Today's episode is with my friend Esme. We have not met in person, but her story is so powerful. There are adult themes in this story. And so I just want to put that out there, that there may be some things that are upsetting in the story. But this story is, I can't think of a, oh man, just the redemption, just the life. There is death, but there is crazy life. And so, like I always say, I'm not going to step on the podcast much. I want you to hear it and receive it. And so the next person you will hear after the sound of my voice is Esme. Buckle up, strap in. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all.
Growing up, we were Catholic. I like did all my Catholic things that you do when you're like, you're brought up, you get baptized in the Catholic Church and you do your like first communion, you go to Catholic school. And after that, I don't know, we kind of just left the Catholic Church. We would go like, you know, for like holidays and stuff. We weren't going every Sunday to mass or anything. My mom found a Pentecostal church, so we started going to a Pentecostal church.
And what is your heritage?
Mexican.
Like 100%.
My parents, yeah. I was born here, but yeah, my parents.
So like, you think the Catholicism came from that background then?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's just like a tradition, you know, generational thing. Both of my grandparents were Catholic. But it just
was
like
there,
by name.
Was there a picture of Mary, the mother of Jesus, in your house somewhere?
Yeah, I'm sure there was. Yeah, I don't remember because it was so long ago, but no, I'm pretty sure there were. I know I had a little necklace with her face on it when I was little.
So So do you remember what, or have they told you what pushed them away from Catholicism?
No, honestly. Like I said, we didn't really go like every Sunday. We went during like Easter, Christmas, the like big things. Mm-hmm. I think my mom probably made a friend who invited her to her church. And I know some people from like some of my aunts, my mom's sisters, they left the Catholic faith and they went to like Pentecostal churches and they would tell my mom about it. Like, oh, you should go to this church. Like, look for one in your area. So I think it was that. I think it was like my aunts telling my mom, like, check out the Pentecostal church. And my mom being like, okay, sure.
Hmm. So they became Pentecostal. What happened then? Were you alive at this point?
Yes. I was, I want to say like 5 or 6. I remember people like speaking in tongues and stuff in the congregation and being like scared because I didn't know, you know, what they were saying. Right. I just remember like going to the little kids thing at the church where they like take care of the kids and stuff while people are enjoying the service. We started... It was just my mom, though. My dad didn't come with us. I don't think he ever went with us. And we left that as well. The story behind leaving the Pentecostal church is that my mom went to the store and they were raffling off like a huge Bible, like a huge, massive Bible. And you had to just put your name and your phone number. So she put her name, her phone number. And then a few days later, she gets a call from someone. And they go, hey, we saw that, you know, you signed up to win this Bible. Well, you didn't win, but what you did win were some Bible studies from Seventh-day Adventist folks. So then we met some.
That's such a.
Yeah.
That's a gangster move.
I know.
You didn't win the Bible, but you have won Bible studies that you probably don't want to go to.
Yeah. You didn't win the Bible, but you won the Fe de Jesus studies. So some people came over to the house. My mom's like, I mean, sure, you know, why not? Some people came over to the house and they just start giving us these Bible studies. And like I said, my dad would never go to the Pentecostal church, but because these Bible studies were at the house, I mean, he didn't really have an option, you know, so he stayed and we were at these Bible studies. I don't remember anything because I was like, I don't know, 9 years old. So I don't remember what they were about. And one time, they had kept inviting my parents to go to the church, to the Seventh-day Adventist church. My parents never went, but there was this guy that was coming to sing, Felipe Garibo.
I feel like I should know that name, but I don't know.
Really? He's up there. Yeah, he's big. At least with the Hispanic SDA community.
I'll have to admit, I am Hispanic in heritage, but not culturally when it comes to, like, the music. Like, so, I bet he's an amazing singer.
Yeah. He's cool. Yeah. He was coming to the church, and my parents were like, okay, like, it's a concert, you know, we'll check it out. So, they went, and they started just liking it. So, they kept going to the Seventh-day Adventist church. So... no more Pentecostal church. And, you know, I was just being dragged around wherever they were going. So when they were at Catholic, I was there. When they were Pentecostal, I was there. Seventh-day Adventist church, though, that's where they, like, stuck. And that's where I stuck.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Sacramento in California.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So from how old were you when you started going to the Adventist church then?
I was 11 years old. 10 or 11, yeah.
So who was God?
11
years old.
I was confused on who God was because I had heard so many different, I guess, versions of God. So I wasn't sure who he was. I knew he was real. I believed in God and I knew he was real, but I didn't know really what he did, or I just thought like, okay, he's in heaven, like looking down at me. Cool. I didn't really know that much.
Cool. How did you feel about yourself as your like young 11-year-old?
I mean, I was kind of like the good kid because I have a sister who has had a, quite the life, like very different than mine. And I was kind of like the perfect, quote unquote, perfect child. So I really never rebelled against my parents. I never went through like a rebellious phase or like, I was never rude to them. They never hit me, which, you know, in Hispanic culture, like that's kind of the way that they discipline you is by like
the chancla.
Yeah, exactly. They never had to do that
to
me.
La cuchara.
Right. And the reason why is because all they had to do when I was like misbehaving or acting up when I was little, they just had to look at me. That's it. And that I would stop. Cause I had a really close relationship with, or I still do, really close relationship with my mom. And I didn't ever want to do anything to make her upset or make her love me less, you know? So I never like did anything to make them mad, or I tried not to.
Mercy.
Yeah.
So things are going well. They're Adventists, you're Adventists. What happens next?
Yeah. So my parents get married and then they get baptized because they weren't married before. So they got married, then they got baptized, and I was like, okay, well, I'll get baptized too, I guess. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing when I got baptized, but I knew they were doing it, so I figured let's do it together. And so I get baptized. And then what, 11 years old? Yeah. I start going to like middle school, I think, when I'm like 12. And growing up, also, you asked me what I thought about myself. I was super, super insecure in like all areas. I would constantly compare myself to everyone. Like, even I was trying to think, like, how far back does this go with like me being insecure and comparing myself? I was like high school. No, it was earlier. Middle school. No, it was like elementary school, like second grade, like very, very early on. Just like if there was someone smarter than me, prettier than me, friendlier, like anything, I would just be like, oh, they're better than me. So just very insecure. And then, you know, middle school, it's just harder because you're like a preteen and it's that awkward stage. Mm-hmm. And this is when people, you know, started dating in middle school, at least where I was from. I don't know now, probably earlier than that, but.
What do you think taught you this insecurity?
Huh. I don't know what taught me it. I don't know. I remember I used to watch a lot of novelas with my mom. I feel like that has to do with it. I can't quite like wrap my finger around how, but I just remember seeing these like really pretty people and just like, oh, I don't look like that. And at school too.
I don't think anyone had to teach us, right?
Yeah.
I think all of these things that we're kind of born into.
That's right.
Like when we see someone on TV, they didn't teach you, you have to compare yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what we're born into. All these feelings, these thoughts, how you look at yourself is from our first birth into Adam.
Right.
But we don't know that, right? We just like, it is what it is, right? This is how.
Yeah.
This is how we live.
Yeah, that's how I lived.
But your mom wasn't like, this is what we do. We're going to watch this novella and this beautiful lady, you're to compare yourself with her.
Right.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. No.
So were you like a jealous, insecure, envious girl growing up?
So do you remember Tumblr?
Do I? You can still find my Tumblr.
No way.
Yowit.tumblr.com. Maybe you shouldn't go look at it.
I will.
It is all the feels.
Yeah, that's how mine was too. And it was like cool to be sad all the time. Cool. And so,
number one sad boy right here.
Yeah, no, sad girl for sure. I was all over Tumblr. Everything just like life felt like it sucked for some reason. Everything was like dark. And it was cool. Like, it was, I don't know. Like, you kind of find your identity in that. Like, being sad.
Did you change your themes all the time? Did you change your Tumblr's themes all the time?
I kept it pretty... Yeah, I think I might have changed it once or twice. I was into, like, the whole... I don't know if it's coding, but you know when you would go and edit and, like, go into the...
HTML.
Yes,
and stuff
that stuff.
Like that.
Yeah.
So when I showed up to your page, would a song be playing?
Probably. Or I don't know if I was that advanced.
Was it like Juice WRLD where it's like really sad and you're just like, this is my life?
That was like before my time, but it was, or not, that was afterwards, but it was probably like Lana Del Rey, like sad girl vibes, like summertime sadness type of stuff.
All right. So if you're listening to this, you have no idea what Tumblr is. This has nothing to do with you. But it took over the culture.
Yeah.
And it was ASAP Rocky and Lana Del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tumblr was all sad girl vibes. And so you started getting your identity through these vibes?
Oh, yeah. I did. But, like, life actually felt this way, you know? Like, life actually felt like it sucked. Like, it didn't have any real purpose. So I was relating to all of this stuff that I was seeing on like Tumblr and stuff, all the dark, depressing quotes. And I don't know, it was a mess.
There's this idea that the more pain we are in, the deeper we are as a person.
That's true.
And my friend Ruth, I think she, I don't know if she had Tumblr because she was in Australia, but it was all about that idea. If you knew how much pain I was in, you would believe that I am some deep, deep person. And that's probably just immaturity.
Mm-hmm.
I think a large part of it is immaturity. But the truth is, we desperately want to be important.
Huh? Right. Absolutely.
You wanted to be important. Did you believe you were?
No, because I thought there was always someone better than me out there. So I didn't feel like I was important.
Mercy.
When I entered high school, so like I said, I never like really did anything bad because I wanted my parents to love me and I didn't want them to be bad at me because then I felt rejected. I entered high school. And I just kind of started hanging out with the wrong crowd that they introduced me to, like, weed and stuff. And before I would say, like, oh, I'm never doing that. But because all the cool people were doing it, I was like, well, I want to be cool. I want to do the edibles, too. So I started doing that. And this was, like, a new identity that I could take on. So no more sad girl, a little bit of sad girl, but a lot of like, hey, let's go get high and ditch school. That was like the new thing that I started doing.
What did you think about your parents finding out about any of that? Was that over then? Was it no longer like, I hope they don't catch me? No, it was just like...
I felt really guilty because I had never, like I said, growing up, like I'd never tried to do anything wrong. So I felt bad for like going behind their backs, but at the same time, I was like, "Eh, nothing matters." Like YOLO, you know, that kind of stuff. That kind of like that was the mindset that I had. Like, well, whatever, I'm young, it's fine as long as they don't find out.
Were you in public school?
Yeah.
So how long did that phase last?
It lasted for about a year. My freshman year was like. That was what I was doing. I was just smoking my freshman year, ditching class to go like smoke, getting high, going to class high. I didn't care about my grades. I just cared about like living for the moment and doing fun things with friends. And I also started to kind of date guys. I would never like say like, oh yeah, this is my boyfriend. It was just kind of like dating around. And so that made me feel good because, oh, someone thinks I'm pretty. So then I must be pretty. And I never, ever, I was, how old was I? Like 14 years old. Yeah. So I knew that one thing I never wanted to do was to like be, to have sex with someone that I wasn't married to. I don't know why. I just knew it. Like, I'm like,
why was that a bigger deal than smoking or something in your mind?
I guess because it was like, I don't want to be vulnerable in front of someone when I'm already so insecure about myself. And what if they leave me? What if they don't find me attractive enough after like being with me? And something that was wrapped into my head at an early age was, and this was like my parents trying to prevent me from becoming pregnant at an early age, because that was something that happened with my sister when she was 15 years old. They would say, don't have sex with someone because as soon as you do, they're going to leave you. And I really believe that. I'm like, oh. And I would watch shows like, I don't know. There's this show called La Rosa de Guadalupe. Have you heard of it?
I feel like I've heard of it.
Yeah. It's like different stories every episode. And there were like three episodes that I remember where that happened, where like the girl had a boyfriend, they slept together, and then the next day he like acted like he didn't know her. So I'm like, oh, this stuff is real? Like, people actually do this? Okay, I'm never going to have sex, ever. Until I'm married. Because then they're committed. Yeah. And anytime when I would like date these guys, if I even got the hint that they wanted to take things further than like kissing, I would be like, I don't think this is going to work. And I'd end the relationship because I didn't want any part of that.
Huh.
When I was a sophomore, there was this guy who I was kind of seeing. And then we ended things. I don't know. I just was like, I'm not feeling you. He made up a rumor that I had sent him pictures when I'd never did that. And he was a football player. And he told his friends, like, in the locker room, like, oh, yeah, like, she sent me these pictures. And it just kind of spread that I was, there was no proof. And it wasn't true. But people were talking about it. And I was so upset and angry and just so mad, because I was like, dude, it's not true. I never did that. And now people have this idea of me that isn't true and is not like me at all whatsoever. I remember I was in my math class once and I was just crying because it had just happened. And I was like, just so mad and crying. And this girl named Alexis, she came up to our table where we were sitting. And she goes, hey guys, I'm trying to start up a Christian club on campus. And I just need some signatures so that like the principal and stuff can see that there's interest in this. So if you guys wouldn't mind, can you sign my petition to start up this Christian club? And I was like, okay, well, sure. Like, why not? So I signed it. And then like 2 weeks later, she comes back and she's like, oh, great news. Christian club is happening. And the first meeting is going to be next Tuesday. And since you guys signed the petition, I'd love for you guys to go. She gave us the information, like what time, what day, and what room it was going to be in. And I was like, yo, like, I had this idea in my head that Christians were like Amish people. Like, they dress like Amish people, right? Like, or like pilgrims or something. I don't know. But I thought in my head, like, Christians are weird, like, super long skirts and like super like stuck up conservative. But this girl was older than me. She was a year older than me and she had style. She was cool. She was like pretty. She had style. And I'm like, what? Like, she's a Christian? Let me check out this Christian club. Why not? It was truly just seeing her like, oh, okay. That inspired me to like go check out this Christian club. So it met on Tuesdays and it was called The Way. And I went there to the first meeting. And the first meeting, this girl, she's like 16. And she's talking about God as if she's talking about her best friend. Huh. like she knows him. And she was talking about, God's love for us. And I was like, how does she know? Like, she seems so convinced with what she's saying. And I have never in my life met someone like that, especially the fact that they were my age, a little older than me. I was like, what? I don't see this at my church. I don't see this with people my age. Like, that's crazy. And so she just spoke so much about God's love. And she spoke like she had no doubt in her head who God was and how loving he was and how good he was. And so I kept going to these things, to these meetings, to the Way. And there was this one Tuesday where she's talking about something. I don't remember what it is, but I remember that that week at my church, they had like a campaña. I don't know what they call it in English, but it's basically a week where the pastor goes for the whole week every night.
It's like a week of prayer.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they don't pray, but they just like have messages. Or...
No, but nobody prays during weeks of prayer. It's they do. I'm not kidding, but I'm serious.
That's funny. Yeah. So it was one of those things, and I remember just like, I want to go today to the church. When I started going to the Way, and I heard how she spoke about God, I was like, you know what? Let me go listen at my church. Because before I would just go to like hang with friends and like play around and, you know, for the potluck and stuff. Like it was fun. It was a social thing. But hearing this girl talk about God, I was like, I'm gonna start paying attention. Let me hear what they're saying at church. And so this Tuesday after the Way, I was like, Mom, we got to go to church today. And normally for those weeks of prayers, we would never go on like the weekdays because my dad works and my mom didn't drive that like on the freeway. So she was like, okay, if you want to go, like I can find us a ride. So she found us a ride and we went. And when we're there, the pastor has the exact same message that Alexis gave earlier that day. I don't remember what it was about, but I remember that it was the same thing. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, that's kind of crazy. At the end of the message, the pastor gave an altar call. Like, if you want to give your life to Christ, come step forward. And it was for baptism. And I was like, something in me, just like my feet came up to the floor and I started walking. I'm like, no way. And I go to the front and I'm like 15 at the time. I'm pretty young. I think I was like the only like young person that stood up. So everyone like clapped and stuff. And I was just like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to give my life to God, because I had been hearing about him through Alexis. And I wanted what she had, basically. Like, this girl's different. And I want it. I don't know what it is, but I want it. So when we got home that night, you know, my mom is obviously, she's very excited for me. She's very happy that I want to give my life to God. And this time it's like coming from me actually wanting to, because remember, I got baptized when I was 11 years old, but I didn't, you know, I just did it because my parents didn't. But now it's coming from my heart. I actually want to do it. I know, or at least I think I know, you know, why I'm getting baptized and what baptism is. And I'm super excited about it. And I go to my room and I hear my dad come home. And I hear my mom. I overhear this conversation between my mom and him. And she's telling him, so your daughter got up from, you know, there was an altar call. She stood up. She's going to get baptized this coming Sabbath. And I was expecting my dad to be happy, or, you know, to be like encouraging or something. But he was very, I don't know. It wasn't the reaction that I expected. I remember just he was saying, she's too young to do that. She can't be playing around with that sort of stuff. She has to wait until she's older. She's too young. She doesn't even really know what she's doing. That's not something to be played with. And I remember like overhearing this and I'm like, he's right. Like, I really don't deserve this, because look at what I've been doing. You know, I've been skipping school to go and smoke. I've been lying to my parents. And I just didn't feel like I was worth going to God or giving him my life. But I know that I knew that I really, really wanted to. I'm like, but I want to, though. Like, I'm willing to change. Right? I thought that I was going to change on my own. And so I remember that was the first time ever in my life that I actually prayed from my heart. I got on my knees and I was like, God, I don't know if you want me, but I really, really want you. And I said, if you want me to get baptized, give my life to you this coming Saturday, give me a sign. I said, give me a sign. But if you think I'm not ready, give me a sign as well. Like, tell me, I won't do it. Like, if you don't want me to do it, I won't do it. So I just prayed and I asked for a sign and I went to sleep. The next day, this was like theme week. The next day was like workout Wednesday. And I was like, oh, I don't have anything to wear. Let me go to my mom's room. And I saw this like shirt that looked sporty, I guess. And I put it on. I didn't even really pay attention to what was on it. I just put it on and I went to my first period health class. And the shirt said, sígueme, which it's in Spanish. It means follow me. And it had a verse. It was Mark, I want to say Mark 2:14. The verse that was right below the word sígueme. And my friend in my health class, she's like, oh, I like your shirt. What does it say? And I was like, oh, it says follow me. She's like, oh, I see that. That's a Bible verse. Like, you should go look it up. I'm like, oh, okay. So I go and look up the verse. And it's the story of when Jesus tells Levi to follow him. And it's Mark 2:13-17. Where the Pharisees and scribes see Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, and they're asking, like, how is it that he eats and drinks with these people? And when Jesus hears the Pharisee saying this, he says, it's not the sick, it's not the healthy people that need a doctor, but sick people do. I've come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those who know that they're sinners. Oh, and I started crying. Because that was what I had just prayed for the night before, was for God to give me a sign. And here I am wearing a shirt that says, follow me. And I'm reading this passage right. Where God is telling me, like, I do want you. I do want you. I want you to follow me. So I just started crying right then and there. And my friend's like, what's wrong? And I told her the story, right? And so that was it. I was like, okay, like, that was my sign. I asked God for a sign. He gave me one so loud and clear. So I'm going to give my life to him through baptism. So that following Sabbath, I get baptized. It was October 11, 2014. Yeah. October 11, 2014. I get baptized. And right after that, you know, I keep going to these Christian club meetings and I also make different friends. And these friends, they're inviting me to like their church events. They have like cell groups that they're a part of. And I go to these things and they have like women's prayer nights. And they invite me to their church and stuff. So I'm at all these events and I'm getting just so much spiritual nourishment. I'm like, yo, this is good stuff. I get a little journaling Bible and I've always been very creative. I'd love to like do art and paint and color and everything. So I get a journaling Bible and a little prayer journal. And I just start reading the word for myself, highlighting stuff, writing down my prayers. Like, I'm like, I love this. Like, I couldn't get enough. It was all so good to me. I have like my fun times with God, right? I'm just so into like reading the word and like having my prayer journal and everything. And during this time, like I'm like 16 years old, the people at my church started to notice like, oh, like this girl, she comes, she reads her Bible and she's like into the Sabbath school. Like she asks questions and stuff. And so very early on, they put me in a position of leadership. And I was involved with like helping with the youth, coming up with service youth programs and stuff like that. So I start doing that and I love it. I love doing it. It was a lot of fun for me. And I think when I was around 2 years after that, in like 2017, they appointed me as like the youth director or sub-director. I don't remember. But it was like, you're basically the one in charge of the youth. There's no youth pastor, so you just kind of do it with your like team and stuff. Wow. And I honestly loved it. And I remember like every opportunity
What do you think you were preaching back then? What were you trying to teach?
A lot of it was what I had been learning from my friends, from my like Christian friends. They weren't Seventh-day Adventists, but they were, I think they went to a charismatic church. So they were all about the Holy Spirit and stuff. So I think I preached things like how to hear the voice of God, ways to get closer to God, how to make your...
What were those? How did you get closer to God? What were you telling them?
To read the Bible. Read the Bible and pray. But honestly...
Read the Bible, pray every day, and we grow.
Yeah, but that's how I felt. Like, I'm like, well, I'm reading my Bible, and I feel this close relationship with God, so that must be how you do it. So that's what I would, you know, talk about. And whenever they would have, like, big events, like church gatherings with, like, other youth, I was always so hungry for something, like, very... just spiritual. And I was hungry for an encounter with Jesus, like a personal encounter with Jesus, like the one that I had when I, you know, prayed and asked for a sign and God so clearly spoke to me. I always craved that, but I never, ever received it. It was more entertainment type of stuff. So I'm like, dude, like, this is fun and all, but let's talk about something else. I don't know. I felt like it was... I remember my friend Alexis, she was like, oh, yeah, we're having a healing service, a prayer and healing service this coming Sunday. I'd love for you to come. And I'm like, a healing service? Like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, we pray and people get healed and God does the healing and stuff. I'm like, oh, she's like, your church doesn't do that? I'm like, no. She goes, does your church believe in the Holy Spirit? I'm like, I think. I don't know. So it was something that was very, like, I guess, normal to my group of friends. But to me, I'm like, to me and as far as me and like my church and stuff. And also the people around me, like the friends at church around me, like none of them were excited for God. And I'm like, why aren't you excited? This is good. Like, this is so interesting. Like, why aren't you saying amen? Like. And so I remember just like I felt like different than everyone else because I was so into the stuff at church, like when there would come pastors, you know, people would talk and I'm like, I was a little bit mean. I was like, can you guys stop talking? Like, I'm trying to pay attention here. I've gotten comments now from people that are friends with me, like, yeah, you were kind of mean back then. Like, you were always telling us to be quiet during church and stuff. I'm like, well, because I wanted to pay attention. So in a way, I kind of was like, I don't know. I wouldn't even say religious, but zealous, right? Is that the word? Yeah. Sure. So I just was so into God and learning about him and like being in his presence and being at church, right? I thought like being at church was being in his presence back then. But also outside of church, like I had my own relationship with God. So 2018, I started dating a guy from my church. And this was a guy who I was friends with for a really long time, like 8 years. And he was just known as like Luigi from church. Like, that's Luigi from church. And I remember we were hanging out in a group and it was fun. I had a lot of fun with him. It was like me, him, and my other girlfriend. And her brother, I think. And the next day, it was like summer, 2018 summer. We're like, oh, let's go to the park or to the river. Like, let's meet up again and do something fun. And so I go to the park and it's just Luigi and I, and my friend and her brother came late. So I had time to like be alone with him and like actually bond and get to know him. And I was like, this guy, like, he's, I don't know, something about him, right? But I knew, or I told myself, like, I don't want to date anyone until I know I'm ready to marry them.
How old were you in 2018?
I was like 17. Yeah, I know, but because I was around people who they were getting married at like 19 years old, from people.
Is that the culture where you're from?
Not where I'm from, but from the people that I was hanging around. Not in my culture, but I was friends with a lot of like Russian Armenian people, and they get married early, and they're all Christian. So it's like what you do when you're a Christian couple, you get married super early, right? So that's what I wanted for myself. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to date anyone unless I know that I'm ready to marry them. And
you start dating the big guy. And this is serious. This means we're on the road
to marriage.
Yeah. How did that go?
Yeah. So I kept hanging out with him over the summer and he was just a lot of fun. And I'm like, you know what? If he asked me to be his girlfriend, I would say yes. So July 26, 2018, he asks me to be his girlfriend and I say yes. And I tell him, hey, in order for this relationship to work, God has to be in the center of it or else.
Gotta yes, be in the middle.
Or else it's not gonna work. He's like, yeah, no, I agree, definitely. And so a couple of days later, I was like, hey, let's read the Bible together and like, let's start praying before bed and stuff.
Let's have let's have devotionals together. This will
right. Yeah. Like, let's start, you know, having, cause we said we were going to put God in the middle. So, and at first he was a little hesitant, but then he's like, okay, well, we did say that. So yeah, let's do it. So we just start, you know, reading the Bible together here and there. I don't even remember what we would read, but we would read together and like pray before bed. And I slowly started to get so like super invested in my relationship with Luigi that I kind of pushed my relationship with God to the side. Like I wouldn't pray that much anymore. I wouldn't be in my Bible journaling anymore. I wouldn't really.
But God was supposed to be in the center.
Yeah.
What happened? I'm low-key.
No, I.
And the reason is because. If I think I said that in every relationship I was in and tried to have devotionals, but there was too much stuff I wasn't understanding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we were sincere, yeah. Right? We wanted it, but then something happened.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know what happened, but I just was like super invested in him. And remember before I said that whenever I would date somebody and I even like got the hint that they wanted to take it a little further, I would back away. With Luigi was the op. It was kind of like I wanted to take things further with him because he made me feel so beautiful and so secure with myself. Like I was still very, very insecure comparing myself. But just being around him and just the way that he would talk to me and love me and the things he would say to me, like I felt super loved by him. I felt super beautiful because he would tell me. So I just kind of had this thought, like, I think that I'm definitely going to marry him. Therefore, I kind of want to take things further with him.
And this is early on in the
relationship? This is about 9 months into the relationship.
Were you like, were these like audible, like I am like planning on doing this, or was it just like,
oh no,
feeling like I really want to be with him?
Yeah, I was just feeling that way and putting ourselves in situations where it was easier for those feelings to come up, you know, like being alone together when no one else is home and things like that. Danger. For sure. Yeah, it is.
Watch out.
I know. But yeah, one day it just happened.
It wasn't a plan.
Things.
So in that way, there's like usually not protection.
No, there wasn't. It just happened. And I remember as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, wait, I said I would never do this. What the heck? Like, am I really doing this right now? You know, it was kind of like instant guilt. Not even afterwards, like while it was happening, I was like, hold on. I don't think I really want to be doing this. Like I said, I would never. And now I'm crossing one of my values that I held for so long. So just, I was kind of confused. Like, wait, what happened? And I think we talked about it afterwards and we were like, yeah, like we can't do this again. And we're like, yeah,
so
let's not do it again. Sure enough, we did it again. And then again. And it was just a cycle of, oh, we shouldn't do this again. Yeah, you're right. We shouldn't. Okay, let's not. A couple weeks later, again, the same thing, the same conversation. And I remember, yeah.
Doesn't like so much fear come into that? Because you jumped into this mm-hmm. cycle, right? And the cycle is, man, we really are, you have sincere hearts. You want to do what's yeah. right. You're up in front. You're teaching. Yeah. Oh, but this thing. But then there's this weird, like, well, how are we supposed to feel about this? And you're trying to figure that whole thing. And then you tell me if I'm wrong. There's this feeling like, did we ruin our friendship? Mm. Did we ruin our relationship? Did that come into play?
It did. And I remember, like, after we became sexually active, the insecurities just, like, rose to the surface. Because I was so jealous over him. Like, if I saw a girl getting too close to him or, like, laughing with him, I'm like, why are you laughing with him, you know? And just, like, super, like...
He's not that funny.
Why are you laughing so hard, you know? And I don't know. I was just super jealous and also angry and very disrespectful at times to him. Just if I would get mad, I would show it. Like, I was never physically violent ever. No, that's not true. One of those things where you're like playing around, right? But then you're like, playing around to annoy each other. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but then you really start getting annoyed for real. So it's like, no, I'm actually yeah. mad, right? Like, stop. And
do you feel like you had resentfulness for like why? Yeah. Like, do you feel like for the sexual activity, like we're not supposed to be doing this, and I'm mad at myself, but that's really kind of hard to be mad at myself so I can be mad at you. And like I'm saying, like, this is not a thought that mm-hmm. comes in the front of our mind, because like we're now chemically drawn to this person right. in a way, like we're attached to them, like we're bonded to them, but we're not actually bonded to them.
Yeah,
like we're bonded in the way that we do things that married people do, but we're not married. You think there was bitterness and resentment
for sure? And I also, how I mentioned earlier that my relationship with him, like I was so invested into that I kind of pushed my relationship with God to the side. That also had a lot to do with it. Because I felt angry that like, I was at a different place and I was spiritually just, I felt a lot happier before when I had my relationship with God, when I was reading my Bible. But now that we were sexually active, I felt way too guilty to do any of that. Because I didn't want to be a hypocrite. Like, I still would read sometimes, you know, after if we were like good, like if we weren't being sexually active for a couple weeks, then I'd be like, okay, well, I think I'm clean enough to come to God, and I think I'm good enough to like read the Bible and like pray and stuff because I haven't been doing any sins. And I was still, throughout this time, I was still serving at church. I was still in leadership. So I think a thought, you know, like in the back of your head, that how you were saying it doesn't come straight to you. But something I thought was like, well, I am like pleasing God because I'm doing all this work for him, right? Like I'm in leadership at church and I'm putting these events together for youth and I'm doing all this. So I think God is okay if I occasionally have sex with my partner. I think he'll be okay. Kind of like.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess just trying to justify it in my mind. I knew that stuff wasn't true, but I was just trying to find a way to justify what I was doing. Because even though we said, like, we don't want to do this again, and I just saw the cycle, and I knew, like, okay, we're saying this now, but in a couple weeks, in a couple months, we're going to do it again. So I knew.
Did anybody know about it besides Luigi?
No, I don't think I was telling anyone.
So los secretos de dos no son de Dios. Like, you are carrying this thing, and it's heavy. Like, we're meant to live our lives guilt-free, open, like, this is my life. Because there's stress when you're hiding stuff. Like, what happens in the dark will be put in the light, right? And so not only is there guilt, condemnation, shame, then you trying to justify to counteract the guilt, condemnation, and shame. But then there's this darkness that you're living in that...
Mm-hmm.
I bet you were stressed out.
I was.
So, like, as it turns out, this was not good. And it wasn't not good because God doesn't want you to have sex. Because he's a hater. Because sex is good. But in how you were living, and because there's no commitment, it brought all of this bitterness, terribleness. Sounds pretty, I mean, it doesn't sound good to me.
No, it sucked. It was terrible. And so, like I said, we were in this cycle of, we can't do this again. Yeah, you're right. Let's not do it again. And there was one time where we both were truly convinced, like, okay, this is the last time that this is ever going to happen. And we came up with the idea to film it, to remember, to look back on, right? And so...
Which is a problem in itself, but...
I'm absolutely, yeah.
This is the last time. Yeah. So for a keepsake moment.
Just a whole bunch of deception. Terrible.
Lord have mercy on us.
And so he began to film on Snapchat, and he puts his phone down and it goes to his story.
Why would he use
that? Yeah, I
Snapchat.
Oh, I know why, because there's a hidden folder in the app. So you go to, like, your hidden folder, and I think that's why. I don't know if Apple had that option. I don't know.
I hope so. I hope that's the reason.
Yeah.
Love you, Luigi. Love you, dog. But why, though? No, don't answer. Keep going.
No. And so he puts his phone down. It goes to his story. I didn't know it at the time, obviously. We didn't realize it until people were calling his phone. It was like three different people. And I was like, well, why are people calling your phone? And it hit me. Like, I knew why. I was like, dude, go check your Snapchat right now. We go on his Snapchat story. Sure enough, it's been like 3 minutes and it's still up, and it has, you know, the little eyeball, you could see how many views. I don't remember how many views it had, but I remember that there were views. And obviously the people that were calling him were people that were his friends. Like, hey, dude, you probably, like, messed up on, I don't think you were supposed to post that. Like, go and delete it, trying to get his attention, right? And I saw that, and I was so mad. Oh, my gosh.
I can't imagine. Like, I'm shocked right now. I can't imagine a more scary feeling.
You know, it's funny because what you were saying about the darkness coming to light. Yeah. Yeah, exactly what happened in the worst way possible. In the most humiliating way possible. And so I remember I was just so furious. Like, how could you let, just like going off, like, are you kidding me? Like, how could you let this happen? just like going off on him. And he felt terrible. Like, he felt so, so bad. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Like, he just kept apologizing.
I would have wanted to throw myself into the ocean.
I'm sure. Yeah, I definitely did. I know he wanted to as well. And I was like, dude, I can't be around you right now. Like, please leave my house. I was so mad. And I just didn't want to be around him. I'm like, please leave. And he gets on his knees and he's like, please, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry. He felt really bad. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, you can stay at my house. I'm going to go. Like, you can stay. I'm going to go. So I just go and I start driving. And I call my friend, my best friend at the time. I'm like, girl, you won't believe what just happened. And I just start telling her. And I was just...
Did she know about any of that stuff in the first place? So now you're like telling her like your whole, like all
I
your
think she was
life.
The one person that did know. I think she knew. We were really close. And so I told her and she's like, oh my God, I don't remember what she said. I mean, what can you say to that, right? There's really no...
She's like, I'm
that
sorry,
sucks
bro.
For you, man. Like, so it's funny because I actually... The place that I drove to was a church board meeting because I was part of the church board where they were going to announce next year's leadership.
This is like,
it really is.
So you leave the crib to drive to a church board meeting?
Yeah. And I get appointed youth director for the following year. Right after this happened. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I was already a director, so whatever. It was the same thing. But just the fact that all this had happened, I was physically there. Mentally, I was not there at all. So I didn't even really have time to react to that.
Your body must have been, maybe this is crazy. You might have been like in shock. Like, just like, what is, like, you're not even thinking about anything straight.
No, I'm surprised I even drove safely that day because, no, actually, on my way back, I was going to cry, but yeah.
That's wild.
Okay.
So when you get back, like, what was your plan? Did you come up with a plan, like, how this was going to get?
My plan was... to act like, or to, I told Luigi, like, what if you just pretend someone hacked your phone and that wasn't us? So, I don't know. I think I told him, like, why don't you just post a story? Like, honestly, like, it just made it worse. I feel like, oh, sorry for the people that saw that. Like, my friend hacked my phone or something stupid like that.
So he went on there.
Yeah, like a post, like not him talking, but just like a picture, quick little note on there.
Perfect. Genius. No one will know.
It's
now.
All good. We solved it right there. No. And then literally the day after that, I get a phone call from one of the church board members. And they were like, hey, are you free to talk by chance later today? And I'm like, oh, sure. Like, what is this in regards to? As if I don't know, right? But part of me, I'm like, oh, please, like, let it be something else. Like, please, it can't be this. So I go and I meet with this person. And they say, we have to address something that has come to our attention. And before anything happens, we just want to ask you about it. And so he just mentioned, there's a rumor going around about a video of you and Luigi. What is that about? And I think I just started crying. What could I say? I just started crying and I was so ashamed. Like, I couldn't even look at him, the person that was like, you know, the church board member. I couldn't look at them. I was just looking down and crying and just apologizing. I'm so sorry. Yes, it's true. It's not a rumor. It's true. I'm so sorry. He said, we're going to bring Luigi here as well. He's on his way. And so he just talked to the both of us and said, you know, like, pretty much a lot of people have brought it to our attention, to the pastor, the board members. It wasn't just one person, one or two, like it's a lot of people. And since you're in a position of leadership, it's really bad. Like,
right.
Terrible scenario to be in. He said, we have to address it in front of the church. And we don't know yet how we're going to do it. We'll keep you guys updated. But until then, like, just, you know, be prepared that that's going to happen soon. And I remember just thinking, like, oh, there goes my reputation. Because at church, since I was the only young person that was in leadership at a young age, and people really respected me a lot because they saw my heart for God. It was evident. For people would tell me, right? Like, but now that this happened, I'm like, it's kind of like everything that I had done for the church, everything, every youth thing, everything, like, it's just, they're gonna see it as like hypocrisy and fake. And maybe I am a hypocrite and maybe I am fake.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break right now. And what I want to tell you guys about is to stop listening to this right now and go review us on Apple Podcasts. Stop. Pause it right here. We'll wait. Okay, we're back. You reviewed it. You gave us 5 stars because you love it. You love the gospel so much. Let's get back into Esme's story.
We were really close. Luigi and I were really close to the people there because I think we both were in leadership. He played a role. He would help me out a lot. And a couple of days later, someone else, another one of the church board members who was like a spiritual father to me, he said, I want to talk to you and Luigi. And so I really thought that he was going to talk to us. I thought the conversation was going to go somewhere different than it did. Basically, the conversation, there was a lot of like anger. He was very angry. I felt like I was getting lectured by my actual dad, you know? And something that he said was, your reputation is, it was something along the lines of like, your reputation is completely shattered. And you're starting from now, like, you're going to have to start earning it back. Something like that. And I'm like, yeah, he's right. And he told us, in a couple of days, we're going to have the church board meeting, not church board member, congregation, some sort of meeting. And this issue or this thing is going to be addressed in front of the whole church because you are in a position of leadership and we have to address it. So it's going to be brought to everyone's attention and there has to be like a disciplinary hearing, I guess, for what you guys did. And he said, you don't have to be in that meeting, but I encourage you to be in it. And I would even encourage you to apologize to the church for this incident that occurred. And since he had already told me about the whole thing with my reputation being shattered, I was like, okay, well, let me try to save it like as much as I can, right? Or let me just try. So I wrote down this like,
Did after having that conversation with him, like, what did it draw out of you?
Oh, man. I was just so, like, I was so sad. And, like, I truly, truly, like, believed what he said about my reputation being over. And I thought, yeah, like, how am I going to show my face? But maybe they'll respect me if I do show my face, at least to apologize, you know? So I just felt super ashamed. I mean, super ashamed, super gross.
What did you think about how God was feeling about you?
Oh man.
Were you factoring that in? Or
at this point, God was not in the picture at all. Like, I didn't think anything of, I didn't even want to think like about how God was viewing me. So I didn't even think about that. I just knew how other people were viewing me, probably as like, you know, it was just the talking, like the thing that everyone talked about. And I knew people were talking about it, which was super just uncomfortable, and that my church friends knew about it. And these people, like these young people that I had done youth programs for and like spoken with, you know. So yeah, it just sucked. So he tells us, you know, you can write this apology letter, and I think it would be a good idea to do that. So I did. I wrote one. And it's funny because the day of the meeting was like a Saturday, what they call like Sociedad de Jóvenes. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
People.
For sure. AY okay, for yeah. You white people.
Adventist
Which
youth?
That probably doesn't
They
exist
call it
like
YA now. Anymore. Yeah, young adults. Probably... Yeah. Just switch the letters around.
Yeah. I don't think people do that anymore. Like that's a long time. I think.
Yeah. For the Saturday nights. Now. Yeah, so people don't not a lot of people normally come. There's a huge difference between the amount of people that come in the morning and for the young adults thing. But on this day, when they were going to share this, the whole church came. It's packed. It's
packed out.
I'm like, yeah, the Hispanic culture, you know, they love the chisme. So the church is...
They want that
oh,
little
yeah,
gray tea.
For sure. So the church is packed. They call us into the church and we go to the front. And I have my little paper and Luigi standing next to me. And he also decided to speak and apologize and stuff. So he starts reading. I don't remember who went first, if he did or I did. But when it's my turn to read, I get my little notes. I look down at my notes and I look down at everyone. And I just have this moment where I'm like, dude, I am the adulterous woman. Like, all of these people are judging me. I could just see it in their eyes, right? And I didn't want to look at them, but I was like perceiving them perceiving me, right? I'm like, dude, they're judging me for sure. I wonder what they're thinking of me. They probably think I'm disgusting. They probably think I'm a hypocrite. And I look down at my notes again and I start reading. And dude, all of a sudden, like, I just feel like a hand on my shoulder. A soft hand on my shoulder. And then the words, like, this isn't who I am. And I knew that that was Jesus. And I just remember the story of the adulterous woman and Jesus saying, whoever's without sin, throw the first stone. And he's alone with the woman. And he says, do any of these people condemn you? Neither do I. And so when I heard that and felt that, I just started crying. And people probably thought I was crying because of what I was reading and the shame and everything that I was feeling, which... It was part of it, but most of it was like, sure. I just felt so much peace. Like, you know, that verse that says, like, he will lift you high upon a rock and, like, he surrounds you when your enemies attack you and stuff. Like, that's how I felt. Like, in the middle of this, the worst, most humiliating experience, I just feel so protected right now. And I'm holding on to these words that told me that this isn't who he is.
Wow.
After this, the following Saturday, we come to church and we came back to the same church.
Yeah. Did people talk to you? Did people let their disappointment, like, how were the people in the church treating you? What did they say to you?
Some people didn't, like, greet us that normally would have. Like, they shake hands, like, oh, welcome, happy Sabbath, right? Some people, a lot of people didn't do that. Or people would look with a lot of sympathy, like, how are you? Not how are you, actually, just like, hi. Like, with a very, like, sympathetic look, like, oh, man, I feel so sorry for you, you know? But it was extremely uncomfortable. Just, and Luigi, he also felt very uncomfortable. Like, I looked over at him and he's like super jittery and like he leaves church. He's like, I have to go. Like, he leaves. And then later I'm like, what, where'd you go? He said, I had to go, like, take some medicine to calm myself down. Cause I was like, I think he was having a panic attack or something. And I talked to him and I'm like, I know, like, I felt really uncomfortable too. He said, I don't want to come back. Like, I don't want to come back to church. And I think I would have said the same thing or agreed with him. But because of those words that I heard, I knew that the way the people were treating us, it wasn't Jesus. It wasn't him. And he told me, right? It's not who I am. So I told Luigi, like, okay, well, we don't have to come back to this church. But let's just go to another church next Saturday. Like, it'll be okay. We can just go somewhere else. He's like, okay. So the next Saturday rolls around and I told him, let's go to the church where Pastor Leif, where he goes. And we had met Pastor Leif.
What year is this when this goes?
2000. This was 2019 in October.
So it was right before the pandemic.
Yeah. So I tell him, let's go to Pastor Lave's church. And we had met him at a youth gathering that we did with some churches. So that's how we knew him. And one of the youth from our church started going to that church with Pastor Lave and helping out there and stuff. So I was like, well, we know him, like, he's a good friend of ours, so, like, let's just go over there to that church. So we go to this church and Leif is preaching something, and I was just super emotional the whole time. My eyes were super teary, more because I was thinking about how awful my life was and how, like, this whole thing had happened with my church, and now we're here, you know, at which I had a great time, but just thinking of all the events that had occurred. And then after the service, he pulls me over to the side and he says, hey, I noticed that you were crying. Like, is everything okay? And you know when you're not okay and someone asks you if you are? I just start crying, like, no, I'm not okay. He's like, well, do you want to talk about it? And I said, yeah. I told him everything. Like, just, I told him everything about Luigi, about the Snapchat video, about the church, about the board meeting, about everything. I didn't tell him the part about Jesus and those words, but I told him everything. And he said, he looked, you know, with a lot of, he seemed like he really cared. And he was, yeah, a lot of compassion. And he truly did care. And he said, you know, my wife and I would love to take you and Luigi out and, you know, sit down and just have a conversation. And so I told Luigi, like, hey, I talked to the pastor and him and his wife, like, they want to take us out and, like, just kind of talk and stuff. He said, okay, like, let's do it. So a couple of days later, we went to Chick-fil-A and, We just were sharing, you know, what had happened and stuff. And I think they gave us some advice, but what impacted me the most was the way that they were very loving towards us. And they were very loving, very kind. They listened to us when we felt like no one else was doing that, you know? So that meant a lot to me. And I remember they were like, well, you know, you guys are welcome with us. And you guys, like, yeah, like come whenever you want. Like, we're here and stuff. And so we kept going to their church for a little bit, but we would also like go back to our own church every now and then. Hold on, let me backtrack.
So I asked you this question before. I think this is important. After this whole thing goes down, and I'm not sure if there can be something more humiliating than this. I'm not sure. Maybe it's possible, but I think this is one or two, right? As number. How long did it take for you to fall back into that pattern of sexual activity?
Well, there was some, let me see.
It's just like a ballpark. Because the point is this. It probably didn't take, probably took some time.
No,
but probably not a lot.
I don't think it took a lot of time at all.
And this is the point. Shaming somebody never changes them. Never once. Because if you can think of something more humiliating, like I used to think this. If my parents catch me looking at something stupid, that will be enough for me to get out of that situation because I will be so ashamed that I will change. I'll be so ashamed that I will change. And they did catch me. But it never changed me. And if someone doesn't change after being that level of humiliation, that is not the thing that changes somebody. Because if it would be the thing that changes somebody, then God would do it. But God never does it because he'd be working against himself. He never condemns. He never shames. And so you told me this story maybe a year ago, maybe a little before that. And that was a thing that stuck out to me because I was wondering, like, was it possible? Is it possible that shame can actually change somebody? And this would be the first time because I haven't heard as humiliating a story as this. Like, this is number one, right?
No.
And you were like, nah.
No, it didn't. Probably for a little bit, but I mean, it was a cycle, you know? We were back at it.
For sure.
I mean, shame didn't change. If anything, it just kind of reinforced the fact that I was this person that now I didn't care.
Yeah. So if it happens again, it's just like, oh, I guess I'm just really trash.
Yeah. That's what it was.
And in order to not, and this is what people will do, in order to not feel that feeling, because it's terrible, they'll leave. They'll say, this is not worth it. And if I'm not a part of this, then I don't have to feel this thing anymore. And I can't deal with it anymore. So I'm done. I'm done with this religion. I'm done with these people. And I'm done with God. Because if this is how it works to be in relationship with God, I don't want any part of it.
And I kept going to church because I felt like it's what I should do. And it became, you know, it was a part of my life going to church and everything. So I kept going. I didn't want to give that up. And also I felt like it was the one thing that, well, at least I'm still doing this, you know, at least I'm not completely gone, even though.
Did you try to earn it back?
I did.
How did that work when you were trying to earn it back?
I felt like I was constantly coming up short. Like I would never get there. Like I wouldn't. It was hard to earn it back. And well, a few days after this conversation with Leif and his wife, Kenya, I just started feeling certain like symptoms that I had never felt like in my body before. And I was under so much stress, you know, obviously this whole event, very stressful to say the least. And I remember like thinking like, it's like time for my period to come and it's not here yet. I check my tracking app, and I'm like 11 days late. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, it's because of the stress. Like, that's why. But also these
11 days, that's a lot of stress if it's
right.
Stress. That's...
But I kept feeling these symptoms and I'm like, something in me just told me like, take a pregnancy test. So I go, and just even the thought of just buying a test and taking a test in and of itself was already scary, like frightening, terrifying. When I took the test and saw that it came out, it was positive. And I just remember like, dude, there's no way. There is no way that things can actually get worse. This is like a few days. This is like 2 weeks after the whole church scandal. And now I'm seeing a positive pregnancy test. So I drive to Luigi's house and I say, Luigi, like, we need to talk. He's playing video games. He's like playing FIFA or something. I'm like, I just took a test earlier and it's positive. And at this point, I was kind of like, well, it could have been a false positive, right? Even though I'm like 11 days late and I'm having all like these symptoms. Oh,
we'll
yeah.
do anything we can do, right? Yeah. We'll do mental gymnastics.
And I said, I think it's positive. Let's go take another test. And I need you to come with me, right? And he's in his head, I don't think it's like, okay, sure, let's do it. But, you know, it was probably a false positive. So we go to the store, we buy a test, and of course, this one is positive as well. Like, and we look at it and we just look at each other. And again, denial, just like, no, like, that's not. Yeah.
Get a different brand.
No, to the point where I was like, let's go to the clinic because this can't be right. This can't be right. I make an appointment to the clinic. A couple of days later, and I go to the clinic. They just take a urine sample and they take a blood sample. And I was sitting in the clinic, and I remember the lady, the doctor, nurse or something, she comes into the room and she looks at me and she goes, did you know you were pregnant? And everything stopped. Like, it was like tunnel vision, but in my ears, that's all I heard, like echoing, like, did you know you were pregnant? And then I couldn't even process what she said. And she just starts saying, so we're going to need you to take prenatals. You're going to have to do some follow-up appointments. We can get you scheduled for next week. Just starts saying all these things like that. Now I'm sitting here and I'm a pregnant person and I have to do all these appointments and all this. I'm, dude, what? Like, no way, right? I was just in shock. I was in shock, denial and everything. I think the denial at this point definitely passed. I think all I was just in shock. And we go into the car. Luigi and I wouldn't say a word to each other until we got to the car. And I looked at him and I'm like, I can't do this. And I just start crying. And it was a lot. Like, I had just gone through the most humiliating experience of my life. And now I'm pregnant, you know? And the thing that came to my mind was, people are going to say, oh, this is the baby from the video. Like, truly. That's what came to my head. And just thinking about what everyone would say, what my parents would say, what my friends would say, what the church people would say, what everyone would say. And I told him, like, I can't do this. And Luigi, he's so loving and so caring and so kind. And he told me, like, we're going to get through this. I know it feels like that right now, but we're going to get through this. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I can't go through with it. And I told him, I don't want to have this baby. I don't want to be pregnant. And so I told him, I'm going to make an appointment with Planned Parenthood to terminate the pregnancy because I can't do this. And he said, you know, slow down. Like, let's talk about it. Let's really think about it. And I know that if it were, you know, up to just him, he would be like, no, like, let's do it. You know, but, so let me see, let me backtrack. Okay. So I make the appointment, with Planned Parenthood, because to me, that was the easy way out. It was a quick fix to just terminate the pregnancy and go on about my life like nothing ever happened. And they give me the appointment. I'm trying to make it as soon as possible because even though I know that I'm not going to keep the pregnancy, I start to just like bond. Just knowing that, like, there is a little human growing inside of me. And I have my degree in early childhood education, and I was working at preschools at the time. So I love kids. I love kids, and I'm around kids all the time. So it was very easy for me to already just start imagining, you know, what life would be. Which was happy. Like, I was happy, but then I was also sad because I'm like, well, I don't think that this is really how it's going to end up being for me. Like, and I'm like, okay, I don't want this baby to keep growing. At the time, I got the phone call and I was 5 weeks along. And so it was kind of like, okay, now or never kind of thing, because I know if I keep postponing it or take more time to think about it, I'm going to be further along and it's going to be in a way like worse or harder for me to make the choice, right? So the 5 days leading up to that appointment was a whole lot of crying, a whole lot of apologizing for what I was about to do, apologizing to God, apologizing to the little fetus growing inside me. And it comes the day to go to the appointment. And we get there. And I was hoping and wishing that something would like pull me out of there. Because I knew deep down at the bottom of my heart, I didn't want to go through with it. I didn't. But because I was so caught up in like what everyone would think and just the shame and everything, I just saw it as a quick fix. Something that I can just do really fast and then just go on about my life as if nothing had ever happened. So that whole day at the clinic was just hard. It was a lot of just back and forth, and I ended up going through with it. And as soon as I did it, I went home and I just cried a lot, because the experience itself was very traumatizing. And like, it was traumatizing mentally and physically, because there was a lot of pain in all sides, really, like spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, like everything. It just sucked. And, you know, Luigi was there for me, and he was with me the entire time, trying to make things easier for me, physically, you know, and just a lot of comfort and stuff. And he was really amazing. And I remember just a lot of apologizing again. Like, I'm sorry that I couldn't love you enough, both to God and to the baby. And after that, like, I remember thinking, like, this is it. Like, this right here is where God has completely stopped loving you. And I truly believe that. Like, okay, the sex thing, he could forgive that, right? The church scandal, he could forgive that. But this, mm-mm. Like, I'm done. So, after that, it was very just depressing because I was so, I felt so ashamed to go to God, to pray, to do anything, to go to church, anything. And then the pandemic hit. So no more church, right? Which I was kind of happy about because I wouldn't go back to our church and maybe people would forget about everything. But also around this time, this was 2020 now. This thing happened November of 2019 and now it's 2020. Early in the year, actually, I had a family member who had a suicide attempt. She's very close to me. And then a couple months later, another family member who we found out was abusing drugs. And just a bunch of family stuff like piled on where I kind of was the one to make sure everybody was okay and taking care of everyone, trying to be everyone's hero, like trying to be there for everybody, for all my family. And it was very, very hard. Like if anyone has ever had a loved one with addiction to drugs, it's hard. It's very a difficult thing to go through, not only to see your loved one, you know, in addiction, but also to see what the addiction does to the rest of the family and the rest of the loved ones. And I felt like that right. weight was all on me. Because I was making sure everybody was doing okay. Just trying to, I don't know, just trying to be there for everyone. While on the same time, I was still trying to process what I had just gone through. And when the pandemic happened and we got that stimulus check the first time around, do you remember? Like in March, I think it was, or April or something. So we got a stimulus check and I was like, okay, well, some extra money. I think the best way to use this is to get therapy. Because I really need it, right? So I started seeing a therapist. And the only reason why I saw her, there was a lot of reasons, but what I would talk about with her was the abortion experience. And she helped me, you know, to understand how I could feel different things at once, like regret, but also relief and grief, but also relief. So I kind of was starting to, you know, just understand, but it was more like, okay, I cool, but like, how can I heal from this, right? Because I can understand and I can, you know, but I was still very just, I hated myself for doing that. I hated myself. And I truly thought, like, I don't deserve to live because how can I love other people's children at the preschools, at the daycares, but I wasn't even able to love mine enough. And wow. My therapist, she told me that I had PTSD. There was times when I would drive and I'd have these intense, very intense flashbacks of either the experience at the clinic or the experience afterwards or just anything related to that event. And I would just start bawling my eyes out, having a panic attack. Like I'd have to pull over to the side and like, you know, pull myself together. So she told me that I had PTSD. And that whole year, 2020, that whole year just was terrible because I was dealing with all that. Now, let me see. Do you have any questions? I'm going to move into 2021, but.
No, I'm sad for a lot of different reasons, but I think there's something coming, so I'm ready for it. But take your time. You tell the story.
Well, I stopped seeing my therapist, I think, in July. And I remember that anniversaries were very, very hard for me. The anniversary of what would have been my due date and then the anniversary of the actual abortion were two of the most difficult days. And I remember in November, December of 2020, just thinking like, this is going to be my life. Like, I am never going to be the same after this. Like, this is going to be my life. Wake up, think about what I did, hate myself, and then repeat the next day. Just filled with so much regret, so much shame.
Did you ever stop hating yourself and then feel bad that you weren't hating yourself?
Yes. I hate yourself? For a while, I felt like, okay, therapy's helping me a little. I'm starting to feel a little better. Hold on. Why am I feeling better? I shouldn't feel better. I am the worst human being alive. I don't even deserve to heal. Yeah. So any progress that I felt like I made in therapy, like, okay, I'm starting to be able to forgive myself. It was like this voice, right? Like, but why do you forgive yourself? You're such a terrible human being. Like, how could you possibly feel better? How could you heal from this? You don't deserve to.
We can't feel bad enough. We think that our feeling bad is going to do something, like God will see it and be like, okay, you really feel bad. But the truth is we can't feel bad enough for what we've done. Like, literally, it's impossible to feel bad enough for the mistakes that we've made because it's what ended up like Jesus is on the cross. But we're never meant to. Like, it's impossible. And so we're playing that game. Because this is what this is what the world says, or this is how the world works.
Yeah.
You can't just get away with it. Right? And so you're
so bad
messing with you.
So bad. To the point, like, I would have thoughts like, you don't deserve to be alive. How could you? So any progress that I was making wasn't really progress, because then I would feel bad that I would start to feel better. 2021, I was kind of like, you know, when it's a new year and you're hopeful, you're like optimistic, like, yeah, new year, new opportunities, new year, new me. Yeah.
New me.
And I thought, okay, you know, maybe this will be the year like that I'll feel okay or feel a little better. I remember that it was like February, it was early in the year. I just started noticing some changes with Luigi. For example, we would like to go to the gym together and we'd listen to some like really bad songs, right? That would hype you up for the gym. And so I would like turn that music on that we would normally listen to, and he would be like, can we like play some worship music? And I'm like, what the heck? Worship music? On our way to the gym? Like, little things like that where I noticed just little changes. Or he would tell me like, you know, I've been like reading the Bible. We should read together again. And I was offended. Like, I'm like, why are you telling me to read the Bible? Like, I used to do that, right? And now you're doing it. I was mad because I noticed like he was starting to have this relationship with God that I used to have before I met him. And you asked me earlier if I had resentment towards him because we became sexually active. I think the resentment was so much more evident now after this whole thing with the church scandal, with the abortion. I had a lot of resentment for him that I didn't know at the time. But when he started just saying these things of like, oh yeah, we should read more, we should like pray together again, I was mad about it because I'm like, well, I used to have this, and now you do. That's not fair. And then it got to a point where he just like didn't want to have sex. We were still doing that. Even the whole thing in November, like we stopped for a while, but like you said, like you just go back to it. He told me like, hey, I don't think we should really like not be doing this anymore. And he meant it this time. Like I would initiate, he wouldn't like want to. And so I became mad, like, well, do you not find me attractive anymore? Like, we've always said that we were going to change and we never did. So we're just going to keep going back to it. And I was so mad, like, just so mad at him for not wanting to and for all these changes that were going on in his life. But I still, like, loved him. So I'm like, okay, I guess, like, whatever, let's see where this goes. One day in like March, I think, he told me, hey, I need to have a serious conversation with you. And he tells me, hold on. Oh, before that, in like February, he tells me, hey, Esme, I just gave my life to Jesus and it was in my room. And I'm like, okay, cool. I didn't really know what to say to that. I was just confused. Like, in your room? Okay. Good for you, right? After that, like a month after that, he tells me, we need to have a serious conversation. So he sits me down and he tells me, I strongly feel like God is calling me to be a pastor. And I'm like, what? A pastor? And God is so funny because I had a Twitter back then. I don't anymore. But there was this tweet someone said and it was like, LOL, I could never be a pastor's wife. Y'all be easy though. And so I was like, same. I retweeted it and everything. And I'm like, yep, I would never be a pastor's wife. That just, mm-mm. And now here he is telling me that he wants to be a pastor. This guy that I've been with for, I don't know, like 3 years at the time and stuff. And I really, how I told you, like, I truly believed I was going to marry him, or I truly knew that I would marry him. And he's telling me he wants to be a pastor. And I tell him like, hey, like, I'm so happy for you. I'm really happy for you. And I was happy for him, but I told him, I really have to think if this is the life that I want for myself. Because what I knew about being the wife of a pastor, I knew that it required a lot. And one of those things was to be willing to go where he goes and move with him. If he's like called across, different state and everything, like I would have to move with him, obviously. And because of everything that happened last year with the whole events of my family, and me needing to be there, I just was like, no, like I need to be close to my family because what if things happen again? Like they're not going to be okay if I'm not there. I need to be there. So I can't move with you. And also I just felt like angry that I didn't have a calling anymore because now my calling as a pastor's wife was just that, to be the wife of a pastor and to follow along with wherever God is calling him. But me, I'm kind of like pushed to the side. Or less than, Does that make sense? So I tell him, I'm happy for you, but I really need time to think if this is the kind of life that I want, because I don't think that it is. And I mean, if we're not going to get married, the other option is to break up, obviously. So I think he takes it well. He's understanding. And he said, you know, well, I'm still praying on it. I'm still asking God to confirm it and to like just confirm it to me. So nothing is for sure yet. I'm like, okay. I'm over here hoping, like, please let it be. Let it not be the calling, because I really love him and I want to marry him, but I don't want to be the wife of a pastor. And one day he goes, hey, I'm going to meet with Pastor Leif and I'm going to go talk with him. So I'll let you know how that goes. I'm like, okay. After he's done talking with Leif, he calls me. And he just starts saying, like, Esme, this is it. This is what God wants for me. I just got my last confirmation and I'm going to do it. I'm going to give everything to him. And he starts talking about, like, you know, I truly believe that we can live like Jesus and that we can. I'm like, what are you saying? Like, what? Where did this conversation go? Like, what is he saying? He just seems so, like, I don't know, like enlightened, I guess, and so sure that he wants to pursue this calling or that this calling is for him and everything. And I just say, okay, I don't know. I don't remember what I said. But a few days after that, we hung out. We went to like a beach or something, and it was supposed to be a really cute, like romantic day. But then at the end of the day, I just told him, like, I don't think I can be with you. And I was kind of like doing the whole breakup speech, right? And he cuts me off and he goes, before you make any decisions, can you please just talk to somebody? And I'm like, okay, sure, I'll talk to somebody. Because the reason that Luigi went to go talk to Pastor Leif was to see what it's like to be a pastor. And that was like his purpose going into that that talk with Leif. So then he tells me, like, you know, maybe you can talk to Kenya. And I'm like, all right, well, I at this point, like, her and I are friends. Like, we, you know, we know each other and everything, but not to a point where I'm just like, hey, I'm going to go to your house. And, you know, but I asked her, like, hey, are you free to talk? And she says yes. So I go to her house a day after, I think, that Luigi told me to talk to her. And we sit down and she's like, so, like, what's going on? And I'm like, well, I don't know if you heard, like, Luigi wants to be a pastor. And I'm happy for him and everything, but I just don't know if that's what I want to do and if I want to stay with him, because I don't think I want to be the wife of a pastor. So I guess I'm just here to kind of ask you, like, what is your life like? What do you kind of do? Like, what are your roles, right, as the wife of a pastor? So she sits me down, and the first thing, it's so funny, the first thing she told me, she goes, well, when Leif told me he wanted to be a, no, she goes, when I first married Leif, I didn't know he wanted to be a pastor. Otherwise, I don't know if I would have married him. And so I'm like, oh, this isn't what I wanted to hear. But then she goes, let me tell you our story. And so she starts telling me this story. And, you know, if you've heard their story and stuff. So she.
If you haven't heard her story, yes, you'll find it on the Death of Life podcast.
So she tells me and I'm just like, wow, like, how amazing, you know, the story of just redemption and everything. And when she was talking, I remembered my friend Alexis, and the whole thing of talking about God as if he's your best friend and as if you truly believe what you're saying and as if you really, really know him. And that's what I heard from Kenya as well, and the way she would talk about God. And at the end of the story, she tells me, I know that you said you're here to talk about you and Luigi, but I really think that you're here for something different. And she asks me, what do you think? No, she goes, how are you and God? And I'm like, I haven't thought about God, honestly, in a long time. She asked me, you know, why is that? And I just tell her, like, well, I've done all these things. And I just start telling her a few of the things. I didn't mention anything about the abortion. I just mentioned what my life.
When I was in middle school, I was some of that smoking stuff. Weed.
And she tells me, like, I think that you have believed a lot of lies from the enemy. And they're keeping you. They're keeping you entrapped or something. And she goes, I want to pray for you, for God to reveal, like, the lies that you've believed. So she says a prayer, and they just start coming to me if I'm not with my family, they won't be okay. Just full of anxiety. I was super full of anxiety that I'm always going to be insecure, that I'm a jealous person, that I'm worthless, that I don't have a real purpose in life. And then I stop. You know, I mention a bunch of them and then I stop. And she goes, what else? And I'm like, that's it. And she goes, what else? And I was like, no, that's it. And she brings something up about herself. And she goes, you know, when I was young, I had an abortion. And I'm like, I feel like I've said, I just start crying so many times in this conversation, but there's a whole lot of crying involved. So when she says that, oh man, I knew that everything, like, it was leading up to that, to the way that I felt after the abortion, the guilt, the shame, the condemnation, everything that I was feeling because of the abortion, the feelings of being worthless, the feelings of not being good enough to live a life of ministry. Cause that was another thing that I mentioned. Like, why would God use me? Like, I'm not good enough to do his work and stuff. And so I start crying and she's like, what's the lie? And I say that God doesn't love me anymore. Because remember, when I had the abortion, that's the thought that I had. It's like, this is the moment when God stops loving you. What's the lie? That God doesn't love me anymore. And she goes, well, we know that these things are lies. And it hit me like, yeah, it's not true that God doesn't love me anymore. That's not true. She goes, we're going to pray for God to speak to you. Because another lie that I mentioned to her was that I haven't heard the voice of God, the Holy Spirit. I haven't heard the Holy Spirit in a long time. And I never will again. Like, because before, you know, when I had my relationship with God, when I was reading my Bible and all that, like, had my little journal, I would know when the Holy Spirit would, like, speak to me. And that had left me. Like, I felt like I was never going to hear from him again in a personal way. And she goes, well, we're going to pray for God to speak to you right now. And I was so skeptical, like, nothing's going to happen. God's not going to speak to me. I haven't heard his voice in years, right? And she starts praying for me. And she just asks God to speak to me what I need to hear right now. And before she's even done with her prayer, the words that I heard was, free, free, free. You are free. And I opened my I opened my eyes and I'm like,
wow.
I'm in awe of what I just heard. She goes, what did God tell you? And I'm like, he told me that I'm free. And she's like, what does that mean to you? And I was like, I'm free from my past. Like, this thing that I was carrying for so long. Like, he's not holding it against me. He's forgiven me. That's it. Like, I don't have to keep carrying this around. And so literally, when I tell you, like, it felt like just the biggest weight was lifted off of me. It was gone. Like, the weight was just gone. And I just felt, like, so just surrounded with love and so light. Like, oh my God, I could breathe again. Like, wow. Like, air felt so fresh, you know? It's crazy because, you know, I was, like, from not wanting to be alive anymore because of what I had done, from feeling like God had stopped loving me, from feeling, like, worthless and disgusting and everything, to knowing that I'm loved, that I'm forgiven, and that I'm free from my past. I don't have to hold it anymore. And then she says, let's see what the Bible says about the word free. She goes to Romans 6 and she starts reading, you are free, those who have, where she's like, Romans 6, 1. What is it?
What shall we say then? Yeah. Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound?
Then it was 6:11, I think. Let me see.
Therefore, consider your.
Yeah, she just starts reading She starts reading Romans 6, I think, the whole chapter. She says, pay attention to the word free and freedom in here, since that's the word that God spoke to you. So I was looking and reading. I'm like, God is telling me that I'm free from sin. Like, that happened. And not only am I free from my past, I don't have to hold it anymore. It doesn't belong to me. But I'm free from, because that's what it was. I mean, it was sin, right, that I was holding on to for all this time. And I just understood, like, this is good. This is good news. I don't have to carry this anymore with me. So after that conversation, I felt incredible, and I was so happy to hear the voice of God for the first time in so long, and to know that I was forgiven, that I was loved, because I really thought I wasn't loved. I really, really believe that. And I realized that the whole reason why I didn't want to be with Luigi wasn't, it really didn't have anything to do with him, but it had everything to do with me not wanting to live a life of ministry. Because I didn't feel good enough for that. I didn't feel like he would use me. I didn't feel like he would want me. But ever since I gave my life to Christ when I was 15 years old, I knew that I wanted to do this forever. Like, I wanted to talk to people about Jesus. I wanted to, like, make a difference in the world and the way that I love people. And God told me very early in 2018, actually, in the beginning of the year, he gave me he told me, like, that I was going to start a young adults Bible study for women specifically. And I even went on a Google document and I wrote down ideas, just inspired by God, right? Just like writing stuff down and everything. And like, I knew very early on that I wanted to do this forever. Like, I wanted to talk about God and share it. And everything. But because of everything that happened, I just felt like I wasn't good enough for that. I couldn't, and that God couldn't use me. And now to hear his voice for the first time in so long, and to know that I am loved, it changed everything for me. And she asks me at the end of the conversation, she's like, you asked me, you know, what it's like to be the wife of a pastor, and this is what it is. I get to see people come to Jesus in my living room. And like I said, it was never about Luigi and the title, the role. It was just about the idea of a life of bringing people to the feet of Jesus.
So
So I was just looking at my phone about when the first time you and I talked. Mm-hmm. And it's around the same time I think Luigi and I talked. It says August.
That was probably last year.
That was last year or 2 years ago. I have no idea. You started learning all this, like, did right after your conversation with Kenya, did you start diving deep into the actual gospel?
A couple months after. It wasn't right after. Although, right after that happened, like, on my way home, I was just talking to God, and for the first time, I felt like, oh my, like, he's actually here listening to me, and I'm just having this conversation with him, with God. So I felt very different, and I was, like, reading the Bible now, and, like, stuff made sense to me now. Like, I didn't have to dig and dig and dig. Like, stuff jumped out at me. It made sense to me. And God just started sharing things with me, and, like, I started just learning more about the Holy Spirit. The actual, like, the gospel and stuff, I think it was almost a year later after that I started learning, really diving deep into the gospel, and, like, reading the book of Romans and all of that was almost a year after. But during that year, it was a lot of just time alone with God that I felt like I couldn't have anymore. So it was really great.
So you've just been growing in this thing.
Yeah.
For the last
just growing in it and teaching it as well. Right now I work alongside Laith, and we have a young adults group, and we're going through the gospel right now. We're it's called Cafe Life, doing life and through the lens of the gospel. And we're starting with, well, what is the gospel? So we lead that out on Wednesdays, and some amazing stories of transformation and redemption. And it's so simple. It's the love of God. That's what brings the transformation, and that's what brings, you know, the kindness of God that leads to repentance. And just seeing, like, these young people on fire for God and living it out, like living out the gospel and receiving it.
Do you still go to the church?
I do, yeah.
When the whole thing went down?
Still go.
How do you walk around in that church?
How do I walk around? Honestly.
With, like, your head held high?
I do. I am been completely healed from all the shame. My goal is to go in love. And for a while, I held some unforgiveness towards people that I thought, because I don't, at the end of the day, I don't know, people that I thought had spread it initially, people that we had on Snapchat, and then I thought, like, oh, it's probably them who, like, told their parents, and then it got to the church. I held some unforgiveness, but that day, like, that I received the gospel and that God told me I was free, there was no room for unforgiveness in my heart whatsoever. Like, how could I possibly not forgive if I walk in forgiveness? I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't even have to, like, think, like, oh, I need to forgive them now. I saw them and I love them. Truly. Like, it was a miracle.
Wow.
Yeah. And even now, like, I love the people there. No unforgiveness for anyone. Yeah,
now
that's correct. So I am getting married to Luigi.
We're going to have him on here. All right, well, let me ask you this, and then we'll wrap it up. If you go back and you grab that girl, maybe not right after it happened, because you were, like, tweaking after that whole thing on the way to the board meeting. But if you go and grab that girl either then or after this abortion, and you get to pull her aside,
How would you love? How would you love her?
I would just hug her. I would just hold her for a long time. And just tell her that God has a redemption plan for this. And that this isn't where it ends. Like, these feelings right now of massive guilt, feeling like you don't want to be alive, like, it doesn't end here. God has a plan of redemption for this story.
This is so crazy. Because there's a lot of people who have never experienced this. And they live their whole lives trapped by a mistake they made after a mistake that they made. And they just stuff it down. And it wasn't written in stone that you were going to understand this or that you were going to get this.
Praise God. Yeah.
Praise the Lord, right?
And I remember just feeling like, okay, when I was, before I received the gospel, before I understood that I was loved, there was a moment where I felt like, but I knew better. I knew better than to do this. So maybe God will forgive the girl that has the abortion that didn't know God, right? Because she didn't know that it was wrong. But me, like, I had been walking with God and I knew better and I knew what I was doing and I still decided to do it. So for me, there's no forgiveness. And I really believe that there wasn't forgiveness for me. But God knew that I would do that. And he still sent his son to die for me. Right? Like, we think of our timeline. And like, God is outside of our timeline. And so, if anyone's listening to this and they feel that way, like, I had an abortion. And I knew better. And I still did it. There is forgiveness for you still. There is forgiveness, even if you did. Yeah.
God loves you so much with an everlasting love. If anyone is listening to this and they feel like, this can't be for me. This can't be for me.
Yeah.
That's a lie. That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
From the enemy. God loves you so much. And all sin is the same in this way.
Right.
That it's all forgiven. Like, there's nothing you, there's nothing so wild. If you were to grab onto this fact that because the blood has been spilled, you are forgiven. Just grab onto it. No more living in unforgiveness. No more living in guilt, shame, or condemnation. And he will make all things beautiful. He will turn your story from sadness to joy. From graves in the gardens. Like, this is how he does it. And if you want to talk to Esme, I'm sure
she'll
be available for you to talk to.
Please do.
But you are forgiven.
It's only you, it's only me. Waking up to a memory. Your love is all I need. Absolutely, thank you.
It's only you, it's only me. Waking up to a memory. Your love is all I need. I feel it. Give me life. I feel it. You give me.
days were better for me. In you where I found rest is complete. No one else can complete. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the middle of the storm, heart racing. All them nights I thought I wouldn't make it. Every time I lay it down, you take it. In the middle of the storm, heart racing. All them nights I thought I would.